Do you have difficulty falling asleep? Waking in the middle of the night? This hour, why cognitive behavioral treatment may help. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, our sleep expert, neurologist Dr. Eric Dyken, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, spends the entire hour with us. We'll also have him comment on some of the latest news and research on sleep, such as why women around the world sleep more than men do, and why they report waking in a worse mood than men. A new study that shows a link between sleep apnea and post-traumatic stress disorder in veterans. Dr. Dyken will also answer your sleep-related questions. First, a look at this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Dr. Eric Dyken is with us this hour, neurologist and director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, here to comment on some of the latest news and research on sleep and sleep disorders. Also to answer your questions, Dr. Dyken, welcome back to our studio. It's been an absence of several months. We're glad to have you back in. Thank you for making time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
If you'd like to join our conversation, share your sleep problem this hour. Perhaps an unusual sleep experience you'd like to share. You have a question about that. Or perhaps you've changed something in your life that's led to better sleep, and perhaps we can learn from that. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. In just a moment, we'll talk about an employee program that the University of Iowa has here, a new program treating insomnia with something called cognitive behavioral treatment. That in a moment. But from just this morning, Dr. Dyken, I'd like to have you comment on this from the University of California in Berkeley. Scientists there have found some compelling evidence that poor sleep, particularly a deficit in this deep restorative sleep, is believed to trigger Alzheimer's disease attacks, so with the brain's long-term memory. I'm looking at this is in the Nature Neuroscience, the journal. UC Berkeley neuroscience professor Matthew Walker, the senior author of the study, says, "Our findings reveal a new pathway through which Alzheimer's disease may cause memory decline later in life." You've read through this study. What do you see? What is the connection? What are we seeing emerge? Because I know there are related studies between Alzheimer's and poor sleep.
Yeah, it's sort of the chicken or the egg, a cause and effect. So it's interesting material. We know in a variety of the dementias, whether it's Alzheimer-like or multi-infarct dementia or Parkinson-related dementias, there's a degeneration of multiple areas in the brain, including sleep-related centers. So you get this domino effect that you need sleep for restoration, essentially. And if you're getting poor sleep, especially if there's degeneration of normal sleep waking centers, then it can just make itself worse and worse and worse. And in this study, what they've seen in animals is that in the slow-wave sleep or non-REM, non-rapid eye movement sleep, non-dreaming sleep, that maybe there's a reduction of the size of cells in the brain, the hippocampus and the frontal cortex. And this allows for extra cerebral spinal fluid to sort of wash away what they call beta amyloid, which tends to accumulate in Alzheimer-like dementia. So preventive medicine, if you can, as a young person and throughout your life, tremendously work on getting good levels of sleep routinely, then you may wash away that element of beta amyloid for the long run and help for longevity, better morbidity, reduced mortality, morbidity, etc. So a lot of speculation, but some interesting finding.
And also so offers the possibility, as we find out more, that poor sleep can be made better and perhaps improve dementia symptoms? Are we that far in seeing that or not?
I think so, and we've talked about cognitive behavioral therapeutic interventions, the big long Latin term, if you will, for good sleep hygiene. As we get older, and if we're retired or if we're in a care facility, oftentimes we're not getting the best sleep-wake schedule. We're often napping all day, not sleeping at night, having the sundowning, if you will, where we're confused and sometimes having to have medications to calm us down at night. And there's a reversal of the sleep-wake pattern that is normal. We're supposed to sleep at night and be awake during the day. And it can just be sort of a spiral if you don't aggressively address basic elements of, for example, sleep restriction. We've talked about that. Keeping awake and active during the day, exercising the brain with checkers or chess, and then saving sleep for the most part for the night, for the restoration that is implicit by these studies that we've talked about with Alzheimer's.
Join our conversation, Dr. Eric Daikin, a sleep expert, a neurologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Join our conversation with your sleep problem, 1-866-780-9100. You can also leave a question or an experience on Facebook, and we'll pass that on. Let's talk about a new – you work for the University of Iowa. This is a different part of the University of Iowa that is doing this, not really to do with your sleep disorders center, but the University of Iowa has started to train eligible employees at no cost to sleep more soundly using a computer-based program called ShutEye. That's the acronym, Sleeping Healthy Using the Internet. That's what that's short for, ShutEye. And it's based on the principles, it says, of cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia, 6 to 8 week online program. Describe the approach that ShutEye takes.
Well, you know, it is a great program that I had no idea existed until somebody from the Cedar Rapids Gazette said, what is this great program they have at the University of Iowa through the UI Employee Assistance Program? This Maggie Moore has this cognitive behavioral therapeutic intervention course that I guess was thought up at the University of Virginia, where over a 6 to 8 week period, they really tailor make it to the specific kind of insomnia that you have. And it's implicit that if you have severe sleep apnea, narcolepsy, a variety of other sleep-related problems, or you're a nighttime worker, that's not really what this program is for. It's for the typical you and me, 24 hours a day, we're under stress and pressure. How do we try to keep awake during the day and get good, solidified, consolidated sleep at night? And I guess what they've did is they had a pilot program, and they offered this to a variety of different employees and staff people at the University of Iowa who had the right kind of insomnia. And over a 6 to 8 week period, 1 week at a time, they address a specific standard of this cognitive behavioral therapeutic intervention, which includes subtopics of sleep restriction, stimulus control, cognitive restructuring, and general sleep education for relapse protection.
Let's talk about a couple of those terms that we may not know well.
Big words.
Cognitive restructuring. What is cognitive restructuring when it comes to sleep?
Well, it's really interesting. In fact, one of my colleagues had talked to one of his patients. Now, keeping a good sleep diary, knowing what you're about, is sort of like if you're in a weight loss program, knowing how many calories you had in a day. For a person with a problem with insomnia, when are you sleeping? When are you napping? How long are you sleeping? When's your bedtime? When's your awakening time? So knowing what you're about and then knowing what is normal. Many of us, most of us on a bell-shaped curve need 7 to 9 hours of sleep over a 24-hour period. Some of us don't know that. Some of us think we can train ourselves to get by with 5 hours of sleep, 4 hours of sleep. So an awful lot of this cognitive behavior is knowing what is normal, knowing how what is normal sleep fits into what your normal day is, and then tailor making what is normalcy for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about sleep restriction? In what cases would you want to restrict sleep to improve your sleep?
Well, have you ever just laid in bed for hours and hours and counted the sheep. And then you thought about, you know, my kids are going to college, graduate school, and then mom and dad are getting older. And how much money do we really – what if I die tomorrow? And my the dogs get – and I love that cat. And, oh, my God. And then you start thinking and you're thinking and you're thinking. So sometimes you can stay in bed too long. And we know that if you do stay in bed too long, that that can be a negative condition. And just like Pavlov's dog, a steak and the bell, you ring a bell 1,000 times, you show the dog the steak, and after a while you can throw away the steak, ring the bell, and the dog's going to slobber. You can make the bedroom very uninviting. You lay there hour after hour, night after night, whatever it might be, and you can make your bed the Pavlov's dog without the steak, and it can be a negative thing for you. So sleep restriction often is sleeping in the bed, staying in bed just as long as you need to. Well, the first night I only got 5 hours of sleep. Well, then you wake up, and then you do not nap during the day in this specific case. Now, naps might not be bad in some individuals. Not in this case. No nap. So by the time 10 o'clock, 9:30, whenever you go to bed, runs around, you only got 5 hours of sleep. I'm pretty tired. Well, but I'm still thinking about that dog and the cat. And, okay, you have some trouble getting to sleep this night. You got another night of 5 hours. And you don't sleep the next 24 hours. And by the time it finally catches up with you, you're going to pass out and you're going to sleep deep and solidly because of general sleep restriction. Now, that's a simple approach. It doesn't work for everyone. But in some cases, it might be the way to break the cycle of negative conditioning in the bedroom environment.
Mm-hmm. University of Iowa started training eligible employees at no cost to sleep more soundly through this program, through the University of Virginia's program, I believe. Dr. Dykin, do you see this as a trend, employers becoming more interested in how well employees sleep?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Riverside Casino, I might as well mention them. I don't ever really work at the casino, but they had us come and talk to them many years ago. The owner has people who work 7 days a week, 24 hours, and they're going home after being up all night, driving very, very sleepy, and we know that people fall asleep, including residents and doctors and people who work overnight at Hy-Vee because they're sleepy, they're fighting Mother Nature, and that's a big deal. And if you fall asleep driving in a car, it may be the last time you fall asleep. So you want your workers to be healthy. And there is some self-serving to it. You are more productive. You're happier. Quality of life for the managerial level and for the employee. And absolutely. And what a great thing. And it's such a surprise. I didn't even know we had the program. And a lot of the other doctors at our graduate medical education meeting of last week didn't know this program was availed either. And I think we're just pleasantly surprised that these things are going on. And I think they will continue to improve.
1-866-780-9100 if you have a question or an experience to share out of your life as you slumber. Perhaps you have a sleep problem you'd like to share and get some tips on that or at least some advice. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Here's a tweet from Derek. He's offering some advice here. This is interesting. I've downloaded apps for my smartphone and PC that further dim and tint my screen red at night. He says, best change ever. So more and more evidence that our electronic devices are keeping us up, especially we wake up at night and we say, I can't sleep. So you pick up that tablet. It's got all this light going into your eyes, which has what effect?
Yeah, because the blue wave light actually is used for bright light therapy. 5 to 10,000 lux of specific wavelength light can often suppress the melatonin that usually elevates when it gets dark at night so that holistically, naturally, we fall asleep. So if you're using really bright light at night and it's the wrong wavelength, like the blue light, it can keep you up. So, and I've heard about that, that they're trying to adjust the light that is emitted through the type of computer screens that we're working so that it does not essentially suppress simplistically your normal systems that want to really build up so you can get that restoration that you need.
Okay, look for those apps. Derek didn't mention the name of the apps, but he said for his smartphone and for his PC, dimming, the apps evidently take the light, turn it turn maybe off the blue or as much of the blue as possible and get it into a side of the spectrum that is less disturbing to sleep. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Burlington. Our first call from, is it Andrea?
Yes.
Andrea, welcome to our program from Burlington. Do you have a sleep problem to share?
Yes, I do. I work nights. I'm a nurse. I work 1 week on, 1 week off. I've tried the sleep hygiene where I've got the room extremely dark. But my problem is when I go to sleep during the day, I can only sleep 2, max 3 hours at a time. I'm just waking up constantly. And I was just wondering if you had any advice. I'm a Benadryl and doesn't, you know, I don't want to do too much so I can actually wake up later in the day, but I just have a horrible time with that.
So your days are constantly changing. You work a couple nights during the week. You're a shift worker, and so you don't have a chance to get into a sleep routine, which...
No, and I've tried where I try to stay up on my days off, and that doesn't work either.
Mm. Dr. Daikin, what advice can you give Andrea?
Yeah, this is the same problem that my daughter's going through. She's getting her over 1,000 hours for PA school. And so she works at night as a nurse's assistant. And what you like to do is, as you've already implied, if you can routinely have a routine, your bedtime's going to be in the morning and awakening time at night, 7 nights a week, you avoid a little bit of an element of jet lag. For a young adult, for every change by 1 hour of your bedtime and awakening time, it takes about 24 hours physiologically to adjust. I mean, that's jet lag, like when you fly to Europe, it takes a few days to adjust. But at the end of your workday, all of a sudden your weekend, you want to be with friends and family, and you try to shift. All the neurotransmitters and hormones that do follow a circadian or 24-hour normal pathway, they get all reset and all screwed up, and they have to start all over. So a good bedtime, awakening time, 7 nights a week, 7 days a week is important, even though, as you say, you're still fooling Mother Nature. We are made to sleep at night and to be awake during the day. That's one of the reasons that insomnia is so prevalent in the United States. We can work 24 hours a day, but we're still not fooling Mother Nature. So during the day, you need to unplug the phone the best you can. Have no one ringing on the doorbell the best you can. Blackout shades so no light gets in, because even a little bit of light through a closed eyelid can affect the elements like the melatonins, etc., that you really want to be addressing with darkness, not with any of this Zeitgeber or time cue, the bright light of the sun, because it's telling your body it's time to get up. So you're fighting Mother Nature. People have looked at the appropriate use, judicious use of melatonin. That is the normal hormone that builds up when it gets dark in our system. And we've used that on brain-injured children and adults and on blind individuals, because oftentimes they don't have the normal melatonin levels. So trying to follow good sleep hygiene practices with routine bedtime and awakening times, judicious use of melatonin at different levels, and again, you know, you are fighting Mother Nature.
In Andrea's case, Andrea in Burlington, for Andrea, she is, because of work circumstances, she is given sort of the toughest sleep schedule to deal with and come out on the winning end.
Yeah, and you know, and it's also interesting. There's a thing called the Hertzsprung, and there's a lot of these different scales. We're all a little different. Some of us are night owls, and on these different questionnaires, you can find out if you're more adept genetically, biologically, to staying up late. Some people are morning larks, and there are some people, we're all made different, who just cannot tolerate the nighttime shift. So again, there's a variability from normal human to normal human, fighting Mother Nature, maybe trying to get as much sleep as you can routinely, 7 days a week routine, maybe judicious use of melatonin. You have to be careful. Melatonin can have side effects. And determining, is this really a job that you're fit for? And then the last thing, sometimes the use of the power nap at work might take the edge off, so that if you can't get 7 to 9 hours of sleep during your day, which is essentially nighttime for you, maybe you can make up it with power naps at night when you are the sleepiest, according to a sleep diary. Now, you'd have to talk to your boss about that, but maybe a 20-30 minute power nap during your breaks, if you can find the room to do it,
might supplement.
Okay. Andrea, we hope there was some advice to help you there. We wish you good sleep.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Thank you.
Andrea in Burlington, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go up to Betsy. Betsy is in Des Moines listening to our program. Hello, Betsy.
Hi there.
Hi. How is your sleep?
Actually, I'm calling with a success story.
Great.
2 years ago, wasn't sleeping at all. I mean, for 2 weeks, not at all. And tried melatonin, and it kept me even more awake, I think, and tried L-theanine. And it, the first night, was I was able to sleep 6 hours, deep sleep, and after that, I had a much better time getting back on track.
What was the supplement you named?
It's L-theanine. It's a green tea derivative, an amino acid.
Hmm.
And I don't like prescriptions. I don't like to take anything strong. There's no drowsy effect. From what I understand, the more you need it, the more it helps. But it doesn't take the place of good sleep habits, but it allowed me to, you know.
After not sleeping well for 2 weeks, you took this supplement, and boom, you've got like a silver bullet here, huh?
Correct. And so Andrea was saying she couldn't sleep more than 2 hours at a time. If I did get to sleep, it was never more than 2 hours and I was awake. There was no deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't have anything else happening in your life, like you had some stresses that all of a sudden ceased that allowed you to sleep better? Other possible explanations is what I'm asking.
No other explanation. I was under at least as much stress, and the stress of not sleeping was cumulative. And I couldn't nap during the day. If I laid down and closed my eyes, I mean, there was no sleep to be had.
Let's see what Dr. Daikin has to say about this case. Interesting, Betsy.
Well, you know, there are a variety of things that work for any given individual. And again, as long as they don't have any negative side effects. But oftentimes what works for Jane, Tilly, Bob, and John won't work for me. And I think you found something that worked for you. And as the boss is implying, he's saying, could you have positively conditioned to something else? But this seems to be working well for you. It's not causing a major side effect. And I said, well, good. It sounds like it's a great one for you. And if it's working for you, that's great. It's interesting. A buddy of mine, I used to talk about drinking a little ginseng tea before I would go to sleep with my little comic books and the other sleep hygiene situation I have at home, which is relatively new, unique. And he says, now, you be very careful. You are a relatively young man, and this could cause nose bleeding if you drink too much. And I went, well, I hadn't heard about nose bleeding and ginseng tea, but, you know, it's interesting. Even too much water or pure oxygen if you smoke cigarettes can have a side effect.
Okay. Very quickly, Thomas asking on Twitter, we have just literally 1 minute. Maybe we'll have to continue this after the break. Can you get too much sleep? Asks Thomas. My wife sleeps 12 to 14 hours on weekends and naps after taking kids to school.
Well, and again, there are sleep disorders. One of them is idiopathic hypersomnia. People need to routinely sleep over 10 hours per day. But if you've got children, you may completely, totally sleep deprived on any given day. And that's big time recovery, and that might be part of her issues.
Okay, so catching up on sleep may be the issue there too. But you can get into a sleep disorder where you're not sleeping well, or you're sleeping way too much.
Night after night, after week after week after week.
Okay. Dr. Eric Daikin is with us, neurologist, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, here to answer your questions about sleeping well. We just heard a tip. Someone's sleep was improved by a supplement. Tales of bad sleep and advice from the doctor about that. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, sleep apnea and veterans with PTSD, there's a connection. We'll ask the doctor about that. Also, women around the world sleep more than men, at least the men, the women who track their sleep through smartphones do. We'll find out why that may be when we come back. So we're looking at sleep news and research with Dr. Eric Daikin. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a few minutes. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Neurologist Dr. Eric Daikin is with us, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, commenting on some of the latest news and research on sleep, answering your questions as well. 1-866-780-9100. Find us on Facebook to leave your question. Iowa Public Radio on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Before we go back to the phones, I want to throw this out to you, a new research suggesting, Dr. Daikin, that young veterans have a higher risk of developing obstructive sleep apnea. This is where sort of you have a floppy throat system that doesn't let you sleep as well, doesn't let you get as much oxygen as you need.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Researchers finding in this new study that having a higher risk of sleep apnea increased with the increased severity of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. What do you see in this study?
Well, you know, it just makes common sense. It's an association. When you don't get good oxygen to every cell in your body with sleep apnea, again, when you go to sleep, your muscles relax. In some of us, including me, I have a hypercompliant, floppy airway in the back of my throat, a small opening, despite the fact that I have tonsils and adenoids removed. So when the muscles surrounding the opening in the back of my throat that goes down to my trachea, my larynx, my glottis, my esophagus, when it gets floppy, it closes like a wet straw. And that's sleep apnea. So when you're getting that closure to your airways, you get low oxygen to every cell in your body. We know we need air to keep alive. We know we need sleep to get alive in between a rock and a hard place. So you get crummy sleep, you get low oxygen, and any other problem you may have is often synergistically made worse, whether you've got low back pain, arthritis, stress, pressure, depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder. So to me, it's not an unusual finding, and oftentimes with post-traumatic stress disorder, you're looking for anything to reduce the severity of that. And when you see sleep apnea, what a great thing to see. What a great thing to treat.
1-866-780-9100. Back to the phones. Jim is on the highway. I hope you're talking to us safely on the highway, Jim.
Yeah, I did. Actually, I'm in a rest stop now. I'm on the
Very good. All right, Jim, what's your question or experience?
Well, being a truck driver, we get 70 hours a week drive time. And you get 11 hours of drive time, 10 hours of sleep. So you'll drive, say, 10 hours and then do 10 hours sleep. And actually, you might only get 6 hours sleep out of that 10 because you're laying there and you can't get to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, after driving for 10 years, what's that done to my body? I mean,
so your sleep clock is constantly rotating. It's constantly not abiding by the 24-hour cycle, is what you're saying?
Yeah, because sometimes I'll be driving from midnight to 8 in the morning. Other times I'll be driving from 8 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and it changes constantly.
Jim, let's see what the doctor has. See what the doctor has to say.
Well, and again, it's fighting Mother Nature. So I'm on call this week, I think. So we're on call every other night, 365 days a year, and it's not unusual we get really poor sleep. And this is why insomnia is such a major problem in the United States. And the National Sleep Foundation in 2002 estimated that 66% of all normal adult Americans over a one-week period, three or more times per week, had a major problem with sleep because we're a 24-hour nation. And your complaints or my daughter's complaints or my complaints. And again, the studies show that if you have routinely decreased total sleep time of much less than 7 hours over a 24-hour period or much greater than 9 hours, it isn't associated with an underlying problem and could be related to increased morbidity, bad health, mortality, early death. But essentially, as the truck associations have had, as our residency programs have had, we do limit the total amount of time you can work, but there is some time for sleep. But who's getting the greatest sleep? Well, that's why these insomnia programs are out there. And I think as a truck driver, as a shift worker, and that's why I was so excited. My daughter's a shift worker. The university has a program similar to this. And I think online there are similar programs that you can go to where you can see how good sleep hygiene, cognitive behavioral therapeutic interventions, we've alluded to some of those elements, might be able to help tailor make a program for you as a truck driver, knowing that any given 24-hour period, you may need to be on the road.
Okay. Jim, quickly, before we say goodbye, if you're still there, what are your chief complaints about having this odd sleep schedule?
Well, you know, some one lady said, get as much darkness as you can, you know, we got curtains in the trucks. A lot of it isn't blocking out a lot of the sun. And then you get other trucks parking next to you that have refrigeration units, and they're idling all night. So there's constant distraction to keep you from getting a good night's sleep.
That's tough.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Jim, thanks. We wish you good sleep nevertheless. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call, and you guys have a great day.
Thank you too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let me throw this in, another study. Women around the world sleeping more than men. At least these are women who track sleep through their smartphones. According to statistics from something called Sleep Cycle, that's an alarm clock app that collects data on users' sleep patterns to identify the optimal wake-up time. There are several apps that do that. This is data collected over 9 months on 1 million users in 50 countries, showing that women between the ages of 16 and 55 getting more sleep per night than men. In nearly every country, women also reporting waking up in a worse mood than men during the week. So, counterintuitive, seemingly, why should women report waking up in a worse mood if they get more sleep?
Well, and it's like comparing apples and oranges. And I talked to this with our program director, and this made common sense to me. So we're becoming a little less of a chauvinistic world, as she implies. Women are multitasking during the day at work, and work can be six kids. But oftentimes, because of multiple cultural reasons, when this person is multitasking all day, burning up calories, and again, sleep is for restoration, they come home and they have other duties. They have children. They have food. They're expected in our culture to do a little bit more. And so a little bit more sleep does not actually parallel getting enough sleep. And what a lot of the experts believe is for that restoration, the calories were burned, the machine was pushed to the limits. They need more sleep than our 24-hour-a-day system can give. And that's one of the big theories on why they may feel a little worse because, again, there are cultural elements, there are relative catch-up elements, and maybe they need more sleep. And maybe we need to have less of a chauvinistic society. So, again, talking to the expert, I think there's a lot of things that this study may be alluding to that will be interesting to study further in the future.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Bill is with us near Des Moines. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure thing. You've got a sleep problem to share?
Well, I have a recurring condition, I would call it. I typically will be completely out at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
And then wake up at like 3 a.m. and be wide awake. And then I usually stay wide awake for about an hour, and then I go back to sleep and sleep fine for a couple hours till like 7 a.m.
Yep.
And that's kind of my schedule. And sometimes I have to take naps to supplement. But I was wondering if that's a common occurrence among different people.
I've heard it enough. I would, just based on my hearing it, I would say it is. With Dr. Daikin, what's going on there?
Yeah.
That is common, isn't it?
Well, awakenings are normal, but usually very short. So how old are you? Bill, how old are you?
Bill, you're there?
I'm 45, Dr. Daikin.
Ah, so 45? You're just a youngster. Well, what I've been doing for years is I go to bed around 11, and I'll wake up at 5 every morning. That's it. No matter how tired I feel, there's a circadian demand, and there's also a personality element. And I get up, and now I go ride the bike, and then I go do stretching. And then I get up before my wife so that I'm ready to drive her to work as a group. But that's the way it is. Even on the weekends, I tend to wake up. And then, as you said, there's a circadian general pattern that your neurotransmitters, your personality will then follow. And on the weekend, I have no fear. I'll still wake up around 5, but I'll crash in the afternoon with my CPAP machine on because I have sleep apnea and I want, during my nap, that power nap, chance to recover a little bit. Works out okay with me. Now, hopefully you don't have any problem like sleep apnea. It's real common. That's one reason you can wake up. And otherwise, I think you sound like a pretty normal person who's going through and addressing it in their own special way, unless you think it's becoming more a problem. So what do you think? Do you think you're taking care of things well?
Hello?
Yeah.
Am I on? I think it's a balancing act. Some days it's better than others, I would say. And I do have to supplement with naps sometimes. It seems like on the weekends I tend to sleep a little bit better, more soundly, just because I know I don't have as much on my plate on Saturday or Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're a normal everyday person. But remember this, our general practitioners, family medicine doctors, those are the backbone of medicine in the United States, and the nurses and MAs and PAs associated with them. If things get out of hand, go to your local doc if you need them. Otherwise, it sounds like you're doing a great job, patient heal thyself.
Thanks, Bill, for your call. Calling from near Des Moines.
Thanks, Dr. Dykin.
Yeah, no problems.
Thanks,
okay, very good. 1-866-780-9100. We want to go back to calls in just a moment, but we're throwing out some of the latest research for Dr. Dykin to comment in the area of sleep. This is an interesting new study, Dr. Dykin, if you could comment on it briefly. It has to do with unlearning implicit social biases during sleep. A study published in Science by researchers at Northwestern University found that simply playing auditory cues while people slept partially undid racial and gender bias, and the effects were still evident at least a week later. You'll have to explain what's going on here.
Well, you know, and it wasn't simply that, and I don't know if it's a good parallel, but if anyone's ever seen Clockwork Orange, this is a conditioning. So, you know, in Clockwork Orange, they tried to make this young individual nonviolent, and they had music background. So there was an association with an auditory memory cue and then a training. So what they've tried to do is they've tried to get rid of racial or gender biases in general by having positive elements with different gender, positive presentations with different race. And with the different race and gender, two different groups being studied, they would have different sounds, a music, a background, if you will. So when they did these teaching sessions, I think it was over a two-week period, what they would then allow is you to go to sleep. When you went to sleep, they would, in the deeper stages of sleep, they would start to play the music. They would have the sound. And the sound would help encode this learning against a bias, whether it was race or gender. It was implicit that that's what was happening. Because compared to the people that didn't have the sound, essentially no learning about the bias occurred. But I think they said 56% of the people had marked improvements in these bias scores on questionnaires, whatever they were using for their testing. And it retained that for up to 2 weeks, down to about 20%. Mm-hmm. So a conditioning, if you will.
Mm-hmm. This is not talking about overt racism or sexism. This is something that these biases that we hold that we may not even be aware of.
Yeah, like, well, you know, she's really awfully good, but and then you get rid of the afterward and you just interview somebody like they're a regular everyday person instead of, well, you know, so where were you from again? You know, you just boom, you take people for what they're worth rather than perturbating, thinking a little bit excessively. And I think that sounds interesting. But what they point out is they have not really tested whether this training that they've done, where they've been able to show some improvement on these questionnaires, these tests, whether it really turns into action in the real life.
Let's see if we can get back to the phones and take a few people before the hour ends. Mary in Dyersville, I see on my screen you have a suggestion for how to get to sleep faster. What do you find works for you?
Well, I am Mary, and I am 85, and I'm on no prescription medicines.
Good for you.
And I think, for me, I would get everything. I have a lot of problems along the way with kids and whatever. But at 6 or 7 o'clock, I get funny stuff on television, relax. And if any thoughts come from my daily problems, I push them out of my mind, and that takes a lot of practice. And then to concentrate when I go to bed, I myself say the rosary and concentrate on it. But soft music, soft thoughts, and things like that, rather than then you'll have stress management and relaxation. And that's what I do, and I sleep 7-8 hours a night all the time.
Mary, that's wonderful. It sounds like you've got some practices built in that are good sleep hygiene, Dr. Dykin?
Yeah, I mean, this is cognitive behavioral therapeutic interventions, the big Latin term from good sleep hygiene, stimulus control, having the environment slowly, gradually making it positive in multiple different ways, and progressive relaxation therapy. Like I said, you start early in the evening, nothing but good thoughts, positive elements, not using the bedroom environment for doing the bills, worrying about this or that. The kids, the family, you're worrying about during the day, but I think you said 6 to 7, you start a routine progressive relaxation which follows up with stimulus control, environmental control, great sleep hygiene.
Yeah, Mary, and that's very good. What jumped out too is that the first part of your sort of sleep, getting ready for sleep, you deal with the concerns that you have. You think about them and kind of deal with them several hours before you go to sleep, it sounds like.
Definitely. And when I get after supper, I push those out just like you would at an office. You close the door at 5 or 6. Mentally, I do that. And then I start to relax.
Mary, thank you for sharing that. I hope those tips help others as well because, 85 years of wisdom right on our airwaves.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mary.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Why is it, generally speaking, Dr. Daikin, that as we grow older, we grow more prone to sleep disorders and poor sleep?
Well, I don't know. There are more things.
Mary being an exception.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the attitudes. As I've become older, I don't even have – I have titanium hips, and I can't run fast anymore, and that bothers me. But I could never run very fast anyway, and you sort of become smarter, wiser, as you implied. I wasn't that good looking. I wasn't that fast. I wasn't that strong, but I sure can be happy with a variety of things, a good television show, beautiful music, a sunrise, whatever it is. And I think you learn to take the world a day at a time. And the reason someone is 85 years old is because they have been lucky, they have been smart. And again, there's a words of wisdom from somebody who's 85 years old. You know, in Asian society, you revere your elderly and the people who have lived and learned and made it through. And I think there's a common sense approach to life. And this lady obviously has it. And my thought is a lot of people forget that. And you look at the athletes, all the injuries they have just as college students and the stresses and pressures, et cetera. If you get to be 85, you've learned to deal with those pressures.
Jim is with us in Mason City. Running out of time, Jim, but please be brief and tell us what's on your mind.
I have severe sleep apnea, and I was put on a CPAP machine. I'm having trouble adjusting to it. And I was just wondering if there's any alternatives to a CPAP machine, like surgery or anything like that.
Yeah, a lot of alternatives. And when I was first diagnosed, they talked about a tracheostomy. You really don't want a tracheostomy. The uvulo palatopharyngoplasty doesn't work so well. It can actually make things worse. But again, a good ENT doctor looking down your throat, maybe that's an option. Oral devices are generally not for severe apnea. But one of the best things is a good technician. And if you're having problems, who knows why you're having problems with CPAP? Call Don McKinney at our lab. He's our wizard. And if you are following with my lab, give Don a call today. You need not the chairman of the department, but a technician who is wise and who can follow you and adjust accordingly with the CPAP, the BPAP, the adaptive servoventilation, a lot of other things in that line that are technical.
Okay, Jim, it could be a matter of adjustment. So hope you'll follow up on that and get better sleep.
Yeah, give us a call.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Dr. Daikin is the director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Very quickly, just a minute for this. We hope we can help you in a minute. Whitney in Waterloo, you've got a young one who's not sleeping well or not getting to sleep well.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have a 20-month-old son, and he's never been a good sleeper since birth. He's slept through the night maybe 9 times. And my husband and I have tried everything. We've tried Ferber. We've tried, just kind of calming, tying his back. We've tried leaving the room. We've tried music. We've tried no music. And we're about zombies.
I bet.
And he'll get to sleep after a while, and then he will wake up and then just be inconsolable until we hold him for, hours and get back to sleep. So I guess you have any pediatric sleep advice, or should we just let him cry it out?
Okay, Whitney, we're going to give the doctor a few seconds to answer your question, and hope it helps.
Well, you said,
all right, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you. You said the name of the great Ferber, and I think you've been through enough. I think you have to have somebody look under the hood. I'd recommend that you see a pediatric sleep expert, full sleep history, an examination of the child, the environment. And we have one of those. I happen to marry her over at the University of Iowa Sleep Disorder Clinic. I think you're at the point where you really need to have a sit down. This isn't going to be an over the phone conversation and an answer. You're smart people. You've said all the right words. There's something else going on.
Eric Dykton, director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. You don't happen to have your phone number in handy for your Sleep Disorders Center?
Yeah, 319-356-3813. And again, in regard to pediatrics, then they can always send you over to the right number for the pediatric clinic itself.
Neurologist Dr. Eric Dykton coming into our studio. The latest news and research on sleep, comments from Dr. Dykton. He's been answering your questions as well. We do thank you for coming in. We'll look forward to the next time, Dr. Dykton.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer, wishing you a wonderful night's sleep. We'll be back tomorrow with more of River to River.